This week's episode of War Rocket Ajax is brought to you by Loot Crate. Go to lootcrate.com/warrocketajax and use the offer code warrocketajax to get $3 off a brand new subscription.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
And welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most chilled out post-con recovering comic book and pop culture podcast. And we are your very sleepy hosts for this very relaxed edition. My name is Chris Sims, and with me as always is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you?
I'm chilled out and relaxed. I was absolutely dead tired earlier this week, and I've leveled up to just tired, which I feel like is a victory of some kind. Chris, I hope you're doing okay.
I think you and I both had the experience of going directly from the con, which we were at for 3 days. 4 days for me, three for you. And then immediately just getting back to work. Like, just immediately, like, yeah. Back to the regular job, hitting the deadlines, making stuff happen. And so I am looking forward to Saturday and just sitting in a dark room.
Are you going to see a movie, or are you just going to sit in a dark
room? No, I'm just turning the lights out, and I'm going to sit and drink a cold beverage.
I mean, that sounds good. That sounds like a plan. This, I have to sit and write a goddamn book this Saturday, so no rest for me.
That sounds about as fun as playing Fallout, which is what I will be doing. Before we get into that, before we have earned our sleep and earned our rest, we have to get through another great episode of War Rocket Ajax. One of our good friends from the con, you heard him on last week's episode, Randall Trang is here. We're going to be talking to him about his history with comics, with martial arts, with pro wrestling, and a certain cat who makes yet another appearance on Ajax, because we take care of the cat here on the show.
Well, sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. We'll see how that turns out. But before we talk to Randall Trang, Chris, we've got some business to take care of. First of all, we're going to talk just a little bit about Patreon. We don't have any new Patreon supporters whose names to read out on the show, but we do want to say quickly thank you to all our Patreon supporters. If you would like to help us out on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/warrocketajax. Kick in a few bucks, get some bonus audio, get ad-free episodes of the show, get exclusive Patreon backer-only art. That's awesome. I'm about to upload all of Chris's sketches from HeroesCon onto the Patreon. Only Patreon supporters are going to see those.
I've not actually done Ajax art for a while, because of the constant pressure of writing. So I figured I would, for all the Patreon backers, you guys are getting to see all the sketches that I did at the table. I finally had to raise my prices this year, Matt. I finally had to raise prices. They're now $2.
Inflation really getting us all these days. This economy, am I right?
Now, Matt, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
I have a video. Certain documents. I have a video that was taken tonight.
Is this blackmail? Am I being blackmailed?
Live on the show. This is happening. Don't cut this out. No, I have a video that was taken at my MMA class tonight. And it is a 4-second video of me doing a sidekick on a stack of tires. So here is my question. Is that something Patreon backers would like to see? If so, maybe Patreon backers get that video if people head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and help us pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills.
I also have been told that there's video of me doing stand-up at the show I did after SC Comic-Con. So maybe when that video is available, that will become available to our Patreon supporters.
Oh, I would love to see that. The one where you're talking about mystery boxes.
That's right. So maybe that can happen. But if you, again, if you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/warrocketajax. All right, Chris, enough talk about that. Let's do some checks and wrecks. So come on and check yourself before you wreck yourself. Okay, buddy, what are you checking in with?
Well, Matt, we did just talk about mystery boxes. I do want to say I am back at home. The con is over. I've got a couple weeks where I don't have any pressing thing that's going to take up 4 or 5 days. So once again, if people want to get a mystery box, that's 10 random back issues from my collection to help fund my move to North Carolina coming up later this summer, please email chris@the-isb.com with mystery box in the subject line. You get some Archies, some Valiants, some stuff I've written Bizarro back issues about, some weird old Brave and the Bolds, random ass comics from my collection can be yours. I've also got some other stuff that I'm selling. We'll talk about that another time. Keep an eye on my Tumblr. But the main thing that I want to talk about, Matt, is I want to talk about Heroes Con. We did the last episode from the show, but we didn't really talk about the show. We mostly talked about Dean Ambrose and Matt Hardy, which is a very accurate representation of what it's like to hang out with us at cons.
Very much so.
And I gotta say, I had a great show. The one bad thing about the show was that I didn't get to see nearly as many people as I wanted to. I didn't really get out on the floor that much. But like the flip side to that is that it didn't happen because I was signing a lot of books. This is the first Heroes Con, so it's the first big 3-day show that Chad and I have done with an X-Men book. Last year's Heroes was the week before the first issue came out, so which was such a bummer for us. But doing a con when you've worked on a comic that has Wolverine in it is a whole different thing. it's a whole different thing. The banners that Adam Riches drew for us went over big. Everybody loved them. Cullen Bunn just like kept walking by and shaking his head and just muttering "couple of jackasses" every time he would walk by. Love that guy. Lots of lines, lots of sales, which was great. Like we sold out of the X-Men 92 stuff that we brought, which was awesome because, you know, we're always like, yeah, this is probably enough. We're probably not going to sell these. And then we do, which is great. So really, I do want to say thank you so much to everybody who came out. Tales to Enrage at Tales to Enrage brought us cookies, I believe. We had a bunch of people who come up who said they were fans of Ajax. We had a bunch of people come up who said they were fans of Movie Fighters, which is shocking because, again, nobody ever says Movie Fighters. And I love that people are out there listening to Movie Fighters because we have a lot of fun with that show. A really great show. So many people coming up and saying hi, and people who have listened to the show and who read at Comics Alliance, you and me doing stuff, and it really meant a lot to me. I had a real good time. Also, couple of weirdos, because again, when you're working on an X-Men book, I just want to say it right now, and I want to put this out there. I feel like I can't speak for everybody who's writing like a superhero comic, like a Marvel or DC comic. I don't care if you're selling it on eBay. I really don't. If it's in your hands, I have been paid for it. You know, like I've gotten my check. So, like I said, I'm selling mystery boxes to finance a movie. You don't think I'm putting stuff on eBay to get out of here? So, listen, I don't care. You don't have to make up a story. You, like, if you roll up with, like, 10 copies of a book, we both know what's up. I will say, my favorite people are the people who bring up copies of the book to get signed and then tip. Because, you know, we don't charge for signatures at all. We just charge for bad sketches. The thing that really weirds me out, it's the people who will have like a book in a bag and board, but then they've cut out part of the bag and then put like painter's tape on it to make a little window where the cover is exposed that you can sign. Like, I worked in a comic shop for 6 years and I've got a lot of comics, and I know how to take a comic out of a bag and board. Like, I'm not going to mess up the comic. It defeats the purpose more to have a big hole in the bag where I've signed than to just let me take it out of the bag. That's my whole thing. Have you seen this?
I have not seen this.
It's super weird.
I want to know if the person doing this knows that someone definitely touched it when they put the issue in the bag at the shop that they bought it from. Because it's been oil from someone's hand has been on that comic at one point or another.
Someone put it in a box for you. And if you bought it from a store, several, it went through a lot of hands. Yeah. It went through a lot of sleepy hands on Wednesday morning or Tuesday evening. That I know for sure. Do you think it's the oil? Because I assume that they don't have you take it out of the bag. I assumed that it was because I might mess it up or something.
I think they don't want the oil from your hands getting on the book.
Maybe that's it. I guess that would make sense with the little window, but the little window weirds me out. But yeah, we signed a ton of books, and Heroes was great. We've got some new spots for eating in Charlotte, some secret spots for next year.
That's right.
Because I think I might be done with Heroes Con Mertz, man. Too crowded. Matt, what is your check this week? What are you checking in with?
I'm just going to piggyback on your Heroes Con talk. I had a great time there. It was a lot of fun. I rode to Heroes Con with friend of the show, Benito Serino. Really great talking with him, hanging out with him while we were there. Saw so many cool people. I drew a Kevin Owens for Lauren Moran because I was back doing – I was just drawing either John Cena or Kevin Owens at previous cons. I stepped it up to I will draw you a wrestler. But I drew the line if somebody was going to come up and say hey, draw me a Becky Lynch, I was going to be that is beyond my skill set. I'm afraid that I'm going to do something offensive if that happens. So I had to limit it, to certain wrestlers. But I drew some wrestlers for some people. I got to sit next to Kevin Warren, who does the art on Copernicus Jones. We sold, we hit our arbitrary sales goal for Copernicus Jones trade paperbacks, which was great. It was great just sitting there talking to Kevin, hanging out. I got to walk around and see a lot of people that I wanted to see. And yeah, it was just a great weekend, and I'm so glad that I got to do it once again. All right, Chris, it's time to make some recommendations. What do you have to recommend?
My recommendation this week is going to be an internet television program. You know how you can watch your television programs on the internet now?
An iProg?
On internet devices? An eProg. I guess the proper term for it is Netflix original series, but it's so weird, because it's, it is television, but it's not. I have a lot of semantic quibbles over this.
Are you talking about a series of webisodes?
Technically, yes. Orange is the New Black is webisodes. That is the word we came up with 16 years ago. There it shall remain. No, but what I want to talk about is Wet Hot American Summer, First Day of Camp. I didn't see Wet Hot American Summer until last year. Within the last year is when I saw it for the first time, which is really surprising because I was a big fan of The State when I was a kid. So I'm a big fan of everybody who was involved in it.
I feel like everybody comes a little late to that movie. And I'm sure there's some OGs out there who saw it when it was in theaters or whatever. But I was a big State fan, and I didn't watch Wet Hot American Summer until years after it was out. So I just think that's what happens.
Yeah, and the weird thing is, you and me are comedy nerds.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I had State by State with The State, which was the State book about traveling to all the 50 states.
Oh, I watched Viva Variety, my friend.
Oh yeah, same. I've been on a journey with Tom Lennon since the mid-90s. I didn't really get around to the movie for a really long time. Aiden actually was like, "Wait, have you never seen Wet Hot American Summer?" So if you've never been called a fake state boy by your girlfriend, then that's an experience I can highly recommend. I'm also coming to the party late on the series, but the series is fantastic because the the gimmick of the series is that it takes place 2 months before the movie and everyone in it is 16 years older. And like yeah. that alone makes it worth watching. Just seeing like, you know, Michael Showalter clearly looking older, you know, like clearly. Meanwhile, Elizabeth Banks and Paul Rudd are ageless and perfect. It's literally like, what if Wet Hot American Summer was 6 hours long and managed to be that funny for the entire time? It's really clever. There's so many weird plots. Like even by the standards of the movie, like there's so many weird plots. There's an origin story for the can of mixed vegetables that talks in John Benjamin's voice, which is great.
There's a play rehearsal that goes a marathon day.
Yes.
That eventually leads up to that performance.
The play rehearsal that goes for like three episodes and then they fire the entire cast of the play and get a new cast.
Yep. And it's all supposed to be taking place in one day. It's all, the whole season.
That's the big idea is that, like, yeah, the entire series takes place on the first day of camp, whereas the movie was the last day of camp. So you get, like, such a weird prequel where everyone is visibly 16 years older. It's on Netflix. It's well worth checking out. Chris Maloney is a treasure in that film. Wet Hot American Summer, First Day of Camp. Also, if you've never seen Wet Hot American Summer, that is also on Netflix, and I can highly recommend it. Matt, what is your recommendation this week?
My recommendation is actually two albums that you can buy that have kind of dominated my music listening lately. The first one is the new Tegan and Sara album, Love You to Death. And the second one is the new album from Perturbator, The Uncanny Valley. Now, it seems like you could not get further apart to album selections. But what's wild is that both of these albums kind of have this kind of electronic sound to them that really sounds so catchy, so good. The Tegan and Sara album is full of catchy hooks, really great pop music singing. There's one song called U-Turn that I tweeted about that basically that said, "This is pretty much all I listen to anymore," which is very true. I've been listening to that song a bunch, but just about every other song on the Tegan and Sara album is great. Certainly, the Perturbator album has a different mood. It's darker. It's more kind of synthwave kind of approach stuff, but I have really enjoyed listening to that as well. It's when you want to get a little more pumped when you're driving in your car or whatever. There's some songs on that one with lyrics, but for the most part, instrumental. I recommend both of those albums highly. They've been, you know, a lot of the music I've been listening to lately. So check both of those out. All right, Chris, those are our checks and recs. Let's talk about some comics. Chris, before we get into talking about this week's comics and one from last week, I actually just wanted to quickly mention a comic that came out last week and that I think our listeners might enjoy. Two friends of the show, David Marquez, who is a fantastic and wonderful artist, and writer RJ Ryan, they have started releasing their graphic novel, The Joiners, which was originally released as The Joiners in 3D. As single issues that are now in color that feature colors by a colorist named Kelly Fitzpatrick, who's doing a really great job coloring that. It's sort of grown-up version of the Jetsons is this story idea. It's a family drama set in the future. It's really enjoyable, really cool, just kind of like drama story in a comic. Sort of right around the time Dave is drawing Civil War II. So if you want something else by Dave Marquez to look at his pretty art, you can check out The Joiners. Another comic that came out last week is Batman number one. And Chris, we've run into some mixed reactions on that book. What did you think of it?
It was weird. You know, you texted me like, "Hey, Batman number one's really good." Right after I got a text from another friend of ours who was like, "Hey, I'm really disappointed in Batman number one." So I didn't get around to it until today, actually, you know, with the con and everything. And I wasn't quite sure what to expect going in. I mean, I IM'd you the first thing I noticed, and that's that it's got that good John Workman shit. Oh, the lettering.
Oh, the lettering is so good. The lettering is really good. And even though I have, you know, stated that I haven't been the biggest David Finch fan over the years. I thought his art on this particular issue was really fantastic. Like, I feel like he really stepped up and sort of took it to the next level with his art on this one. It's definitely my favorite David Finch art in a book in some time.
It absolutely is the best he's done in a while. And I really think that probably has a lot to do with the coloring on it, as well as Finch, like, just kind of sitting down and putting in the work to, I guess, level up, you know? The coloring is really good in that, which is, oh, it's Jordi Belair. So, you know, unsurprising that it would look as good as it does. Those are the two things, not to get off on a tangent here, but those are the two things that are otherwise invisible that you don't notice how much they add to a book until you really, really pay attention. And man, like, give me a book with Jordi Belair colors and John Workman letters and put literally anyone else on it, and I bet it's going to look better than anything else they do. The plot of this issue, if you missed it last week, is that Batman stops a plane from crashing, which is pretty fun. It's really, really melodramatic. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. You know, like, it's there's a part in it where you've got Batman and he's, you know, on the comms with Alfred, and he's like, hey, if this is it, you know, there's letters for all the Robins, there's letters for the boys, you know, this might be it. That's melodramatic on one level because it's such a Alfred knows where the letters are, I think. Right? Like, this can't be the first time Batman has gone, hey, Alfred, there's letters in the safe. Like, they need to sit down and establish that, like, in the morning. But I think it works. Like, if you're going into Batman number one, like, you want high action, you want high melodrama, you want, like, if this is the first Batman comic someone's read, they're not gonna have that thought. That of course, Alfred should know where those are. And I think it works in this issue's favor.
I saw some complaints about this issue kind of saying, you know, well, only one thing happens. You know, Batman just saves an airplane from crashing into a building. And no, it's not the most complex plot for an issue of a comic book. But I really enjoyed, one, the suspense of the whole sequence. Of Batman, you know, going out of the Batmobile, launching out of with his ejector seat, you know, with its jets propelling him into the air so he can go up onto the plane, then sort of steering the plane from on top of it. Like, all that stuff was really well-paced, I felt like, to build suspense. And it's just nice to see Batman saving people.
Yes, only one thing happens in this book, but Batman stops a plane crash. And that's like, and it's patently ridiculous. This is the most unrealistic thing Tom King has written, and Tom King wrote a book with Green Lantern in it, you know? Like, Batman's carrying around his remote control turbojets. It's clever, and it's fun, and it's over-the-top superhero in a way that I really, really respond to. There's only one thing that I don't like about this comic, and it's a thing that I hate. Batman doesn't say Clark and Hal when he's Batman. I have said before, I want to fine writers $500 each time they have superheroes in costume refer to other superheroes by their civilian identities. I hate it. I hate it so much. Stop doing it. Stop doing it. Why couldn't he just say Superman and Green Lantern in that panel? And it happens again at the end when Batman's like, Clark? And it's like, yeah, you just said that to this other dude. Like, what if this other dude doesn't know who Superman is? Like, yet. I mean, I guess everybody in the DC universe right now knows Clark Kent was Superman. But fucking come on. Stop doing it. Stop doing that. I hate it.
The other thing in the issue that I'm not wild about is the fact that the caped flying superheroes at the end are called Gotham and Gotham Girl. Because Gotham Girl, like, her being named Gotham Girl feels like you're already making her a second banana, making her an afterthought. I guess she is kind of supposed to be the sidekick. I do wonder if that's supposed to be a thing that's going to be explored. If it's almost kind of like a meta-textual thing about their names being Gotham and Gotham Girl. But as it is, just having this issue, there's a part of me that kind of wishes that their names were, I don't know, a little more creative.
I kind of love, and again, they're on one page of this, so who knows what we're going to see over the next five issues. But I already kind of love Gotham and Gotham Girl. I love that their costumes are exactly the in-between of Superman and Batman. I love that the name Gotham is so stupid. It's terrible.
It's terrible to the point that it has to be intentionally stupid, right?
Exactly. That they're rolling with it because it's presented as very, very serious. And again, like, it shouldn't be like technically, no, it is not any dumber or less dumb than Batman, which is a dumb name, but we've also had Batman for 76 years, so we've gotten used to it. Gotham and Gotham Girl, I love how dumb their names are. I'm excited about them. I think they're going to be great.
It's as dumb as like having this like awesome women's wrestler be from Charlotte and naming her Charlotte, right?
Oh, she's from the Queen City.
From the Queen City. We liked Batman number one generally, I think.
I really did. Like, I'm really excited about it. I do want to talk to I don't want to call anybody out because I don't like I don't know if they want to be called out on it, but I do kind of want to talk to friends who see and see what they didn't like about it, because I suspect it has a lot to do with, you know, the super serious melodrama and the fact that the name is really dumb, all of which were things that I can acknowledge as not being for everyone, but that I actually got a kick out of reading it.
All right, let's move on to talking about Action Comics number 958. We talked about Action, the last issue of Action. I don't know that we actually talked about Superman number one. I was not wild about Superman number one. Pretty much the moment that cat got fried and we saw like smoking cat bones, I sort of checked out of Superman number one.
Okay, I clearly didn't read Superman number one because I have no idea what you're talking about.
Clark Jr.'s name?
John. He's named after Jonathan Kent.
That's right. Little John, there's a part where a cat gets snatched up by a bird, I believe. He accidentally busts out some heat vision and just fries everything to a crisp, including the cat. And that I'm okay with, like, if that had just happened. But, like, we see, like, the charred cat bones on panel. And that's just when I was like that's when I totally checked out of that comic.
Oh, that is rough stuff, buddy.
Yeah, it was rough stuff. But the action I'm still kind of invested in because this book just gets weirder and weirder. Like, this book still has more of Clark Kent, who's not Superman, who's hanging out, and everybody assumes that he's Superman, including Jimmy Olsen. And Jimmy Olsen's even like, hey, you can't report on this story. You're fighting Doomsday. Even though there's another Superman over there fighting Doomsday.
Yeah, I love that, like, there's a part in this book where Jimmy Olsen's like, all right, I got a picture that has Doomsday in it, that's got Lex Luthor dressed as Superman, and Clark Kent. This is ridiculous.
And it is stated outright in this issue that this Doomsday is post-crisis death of Superman Doomsday.
Oh, yeah. This is Superman 75 Doomsday, which is fucking crazy. I don't – we've talked about this before. How did we get here with the Superman books? Like, what path did we take where this is happening? But it's all on purpose, and that's the weirdest part.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I have to know. I have to know where this is going.
One thing that I thought is, like, equal parts super bananas and also, like, really interesting, and I feel like maybe I'm noticing this because it's – because I just read it recently. It was back in, what, April? But, like, there are panels in this that are, like, direct homages to Death of Superman. Like Doomsday uses the same moves. And I think it's hilarious because, you know, John Byrne, Dan Jurgens Superman, post-crisis, pre-Flashpoint Superman, like, had fought Doomsday before, and then fought Doomsday, like, several other times, and is, like, acting like he's just like, I'm gonna do that same shit I did that first time. This seems like a cool idea. It's like, no, dude, you know how that one ends.
I can't stop being interested. And the newest issue of Justice League, which is also written by Dan Jurgens. Number Justice League, I guess it's 52, is a total focus on Lex Luthor Superman.
Which is a weird thing, because that issue was like, due to scheduling stuff, like that issue was like canceled and resolicited, I think, three times. Like, I think the solicitation that it ended up shipping under was not the solicitation for that issue. But yeah, it's like a weird, like, missing piece of the Lex Luthor as Superman stuff, where it kind of becomes a thing where it's still a little ambiguous, but it's like, oh no, Lex Luthor, like, is going to try to be a for real Superman.
It's Superior Spider-Man again.
Yeah, exactly. You know? You got it.
It definitely has that feeling where it's like, for his own reasons, he is going to be a good guy.
Right. So there's so much, like, genuinely fascinating stuff going on in the Superman books, but it's also utterly mystifying.
Completely mystifying.
Yeah.
All right. Let's.
You know what? I'll take that over boring any day.
Totally. Absolutely. All right. The last book we're going to talk about is Flash number one, which I haven't actually read yet. I read the Rebirth issue, but I haven't read Flash number one. Chris, I feel like you were a little cold on Rebirth number one. What did you think about just the straight up number one?
You know, we've talked about, you know, hits and misses with Batman, and hits and misses with the Superman books that we've read so far, and even the Wonder Woman stuff is a little, like, weird. Even if it's enjoyable, you know. Flash number one, even though it kind of spins out of Rebirth directly because it has to do with the Flash, I think this is the one that is the most. Maybe this and Detective are the most, like, straight-up good superhero comic that I can at least recommend with very, like no caveats, you know? Like, and even Detective, like, Detective's great, and I think Detective probably has the most potential of anything going on in Rebirth, but it's also a Batman book without Batman in it, you know? Like, it's got all of the supporting cast, and Batwoman are in Detective, which is fun. But if you want to read a Batman story, that might not be what you want. With Flash, you're just getting a straight-up new Flash story that has, you know, a couple of speed bumps.
Very, very nice.
Thank you, Matt. I was going to wait until you said something. In that Flash has to be like, yeah, you know, me and Bruce, that's another $50, me and Bruce are going to keep our theories about the Watchmen stuff to ourselves for now until it plays out in somebody else's book. But, you know, Wally's going to go deal with the Teen Titans. So if you want, like, it's essentially Barry Allen telling you, the reader, like, hey, if you want to know what's up with that stuff, that's probably going to happen in Teen Titans. You know, I'm going to go hang out with New 52 Wally West for a little bit. So it's a very, again, it's like just a straight up Flash comic. And I don't feel like I've read one of like just a straight up Flash comic that has been engaging to me in a long time. And you know, I know that a lot of people were really hot on the Francis Menapul, Brian Buzzolato, the Flash New 52 series, which is beautiful, but for whatever reason, it did not grab my attention in the way that I feel like this one did, by virtue of its structure, by virtue of the way it's approaching the Flash, by virtue of the way it's treating Barry Allen, who I guess we're stuck with forever. And I'm a guy who really likes Josh Williamson in general. So if you're looking for, like, just straight up DC comics about the person whose name is on the cover, Flash number one does it, which I think is really fun.
Yeah. I mean, that makes me want to read it all the more. And I liked Rebirth number one more than you did, I think. So I think that's a pretty good endorsement. All right, Chris, that's going to do it for our comic segment. Let's jump into our interview segment. Before we do, I want to talk just a little bit about Loot Crate. Chris, I'm going to read you some information about Loot Crate. You tell me what you think about it.
Okay. You want my honest thoughts, right? Like, I am not allowed to lie during this segment.
I think our listeners will know if you're embellishing or fabricating anything.
Okay.
But we would prefer honesty in our advertising. I think that's something as Americans we all want.
Okay.
As citizens of the world.
Okay.
With Loot Crate, you get collectibles, apparel, and more from your favorite pop culture franchises delivered right to your door every single month.
I want to clarify, because look, honesty and clarity are what we need in this world. You're telling me that I don't have to like leave to get this stuff. Like, it's going to come to me. Like, I can just sit in my house in a dark room with no lights on, and eventually this stuff's going to show up, and I don't have to go get it. I don't have to, like, go to a store and, like, talk to some dude with opinions to get this stuff. Because, look, I love talking to people, but I just had a weekend where I did nothing but talk to people, and it was great, but I am people talked out.
All you have to do is sign up, Brother Nero. That's all you have to do. We're talking a new t-shirt in every crate. Figures, comics, stuff for your kitchen. A wide range of exclusive items you can't get anywhere else from fan favorite franchises like Harry Potter, Marvel Comics, Fallout 4, Star Wars, and so much more.
Matt, you said exclusive items.
That's right, Brother Nero.
So you're telling me that I can get these here and here alone?
Here and here alone. You can get all this for less than $20 a month, Brother Nero. I and I alone am responsible for it being that cheap.
I'm pretty sure that we could make it cheaper, though, right? Like, we can make it a little cheaper for our listeners.
You can go to lootcrate.com/warrockatajax and use enter code warrockatajax to save $3 off a new subscription. And you can have it, the box come to where it all began in. And the box will remain in where it all ends in.
And you're telling me this is the crate in which all the loot comes in.
That's right.
You have until
the 19th of the month at 9 p.m. Pacific time to subscribe, and you can receive that month's crate. But when that cutoff happens, that's it, Brother Nero. It's over. It's over. Done. And now our interview with Randall Trey.
Joining us for this week's program is, this is unprecedented. This is someone that we had on the show last week, not as a guest, but just in the room on the Heroes Con episode, if you listen to it. But he's someone who I am surprised has not been on the show as a guest before. So we have asked him back to talk to us tonight. Randall Trang, welcome to the show. How are you tonight, Randy?
I'm great. How are you guys?
I think we're all a little sleepy.
Yeah.
We're all a little tired.
You know, right before Chris hit the record button here, all three of us were kind of just like, yeah, this episode might suck.
I didn't say that. I have nothing but confidence.
Oh, I have confidence in me. I have confidence in you guys. Let's kill this.
Every episode has the potential, but somehow we bring it out. Somehow we make it happen.
Yeah, and then sometimes you have, you know, a bag of salt, and that's okay too.
Oh, wow. So, Randy, you're tipping your hand here. You are a longtime listener of this show, apparently.
Well, it's here's the thing. Like, I spend a lot of time working on comics, and during that time, I listen to a lot of podcasts. And I might not be like I didn't start listening from the start, but I did go back and listen to some of the old ones, especially ones that feature some of my friends, like Chris Haley, Kurt Franklin, and yeah, that bag of salt thing comes up in every episode, so I had to actually go back all the way to the beginning to the archives and listen to that episode.
Yeah, every time we let those guys back on, it's always something with those two.
Well, here's the thing, is that Chris Haley, we have a running joke where he mentions me in every podcast that he's in, so I only feel like it's fitting that I mention him.
I said a second ago that I'm surprised you haven't been on the show before, because you, Randy, you tick a lot of boxes for War Rocket Ajax. You're obviously a comics guy. You're an artist of, I would say, incredible talent and incredible skill. People may have seen the Mick Foley sketch that you did in my favorite character sketchbook. I guess what's favorite character is you drew Cactus Jack, because he's my fave.
That was so much fun to do.
You've done comics. You've done genuinely incredible stuff as an artist, stuff that I love, stuff that I've picked up from you at cons before. You're also a wrestling guy, clearly. You could draw Cactus Jack from memory.
This might be one of those episodes where those people that aren't interested in wrestling are like, why do I listen to this podcast?
I don't think we have any left. I think the only person left who doesn't like wrestling who still listens to the show is Benito. I think everybody else has checked out.
I have it on good authority that multiple people tweeted to Marlene specifically about how they enjoyed her Dean Ambrose list, even though they didn't know who Dean Ambrose was.
We also got some people coming up on Tumblr anonymously who did not appreciate us disparaging Dean Ambrose.
Oh no, Tumblr found us.
The hard eyes Dean Ambrose fans did not appreciate that.
That's WWE World Heavyweight Champion Dean Ambrose to you.
We bailed out on Money in the Bank about halfway through, but yes, we did hear the news.
We really tried, didn't we?
Yeah, but to be fair, we also tried at like 1 o'clock in the morning on the third day of a convention.
Yeah, we started, we skipped around, and we still didn't make it to the end. We could have just fast forwarded it to the end of we watched it after it had aired, so it was on demand already on the network. And we could have just fast forwarded to the end of every match. We didn't even do that. Like, we didn't really try.
So those two things, obviously, that's stuff that we talk about all the time. But you are also a martial artist. You recently attained the rank of master of Taekwondo.
I demand that you call me Master Trang for the rest of the episode.
I mean, I will. I have to.
Don't do that. Don't do that. That'd be weird.
Listen, I am a student of the martial arts, and you outrank me. I have to do whatever you say, Randy.
Yeah, usually. But I feel like in this venue where I can't actually, like, I don't know, physically see you, I think it's okay.
Yeah, but you know what? You know, you're on my time now, buddy.
That's true. Yeah, I should call you master.
Please, please do not do that. Because I feel like it would be way too sarcastic if you said it. And I bring all this up because those are fields where I feel like any two of them go together. And when there's all three of them, is that something that you found in your life that kind of like feeds on each other? Like you enjoy, like how long have you been doing Taekwondo?
I've been doing Taekwondo since I was 7. So it's like over 20 years at this point.
Yeah. So is that something that you got into as a kid because you liked watching wrestling and you were like, oh, I want to do a combat sport?
I think that a lot of that is tied in. I watched wrestling since I was a little kid. My grandma actually, she watched me as a kid, and she would put on wrestling all the time, and she loved watching it. Even though she doesn't understand English at all, she knew how to say Hulk Hogan. That was like one of her first English words was Hulk Hogan. And we watched wrestling growing up, and I really loved the action. I really liked like the kind of the physicality of it, and I loved like stuff like those old Fleischer Superman cartoons where he beats up robots, and Mighty Morphin Power Rangers was like my favorite show, and that had a lot of kung fu and martial arts and stuff like that in it. Watched a lot of kung fu movies growing up, so yeah, I think it definitely had an influence when I started. But really, the reason I started martial arts was because, you know, your parents make you go.
I'm excited to just talk about your grandmother for the next 45 minutes or so.
Oh, I'm more than happy to talk about grandma. She is awesome.
Was she like a wrestle granny? Like, was she one of the ones who like thought it would like super kayfabe, thought it was real?
I don't know. Like, we never talked to her about whether or not she thought it was real or not. She just thought it was funny when people got, like, crotched on the top rope. Like, that was her favorite spot. Someone climbs to the top turnbuckle, and then someone hits the ropes, and then he just crotches himself. That spot always makes her laugh. And whenever anyone fell from a very high place and crashed to the ground or through a table, she laughed hysterically at that. So that was, like, that was the thing I think that drew her the most, was just the comedic level of violence that's in it.
So you're from up north.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you were probably watching Vince Jr.'s wrestling.
Oh no, like I watched a lot of NWA stuff.
Did you really?
Yeah, we had those on tape. I remember even like from stuff that's like, I remember stuff like storylines and things like that that are beyond my age. Like I was born in the late 80s, and like the stuff that I remember about wrestling while I was watching growing up don't match up to my age. Like I was like, oh yeah, I remember the Four Horsemen in the NWA and Ric Flair, you know, wrestling Dusty Rhodes at Starrcade, and all that stuff predates when I was actually born. But I love that stuff. Like, I watched all sorts of stuff that, it was just whatever tapes were available to me were the ones that I watched. And I didn't really know where they came from. Most of it was, like, actually, it was half and half between WCW and WWF at that point. But, yeah, I did watch a lot of Southern wrestling. I love Southern wrestling.
Is there a moment that you remember? Because I will never, you know, I get into wrestling when I was, you know, after we moved down to South Carolina, so when I was about 5 or 6 is when I really started getting into it. You know, I've told the story a million times. I would go to Sycamore Video, which was the local video store. It was right catty corner of the Piggly Wiggly. So, and they had like 3 tapes. And the one that I always checked out, because I just wanted to watch more wrestling. I wanted to watch wrestling all the time.
Yeah.
And the one that I checked out was Starrcade 86.
Yeah.
The Night of the Skywalkers.
Yeah. I think, like, now that we have access to the WWE Network and they have all the library of the, like, other federations and other territories, that's like a godsend for us. That's all I put on in the background. Other than this illustrious podcast, I listen to a lot of wrestling.
There'll be times when I just, like, just weeks that'll go by where every time I'm writing a column for Comics Alliance or working on something by myself when I'm not talking to Matt or talking to Chad, where it's just, like, WWE Network, like just, I honest to God wish they had a random function on there and you could just watch whatever was on. But I will always remember that scaffold match, because I saw it when I was young and I watched it over and over, because that was the tape. That was the tape at the video store. So did you...
Is that the one where Jim Cornette falls from, like, 5 stories up? Is that the one?
It's not 5 stories up.
It's pretty high. Like, it's higher than any man should ever drop, to the point where no one wanted to drop from that high. Like, I think everybody got there and they realized how freaking high that was. And when they actually got up on the scaffolders, everyone's just like, I'm not taking that bump.
Oh, yeah. The scaffold match is nuts. If anybody's never seen it, like, yes, that is the one where... that is the one where Big Bubba Rogers, aka the Big Boss Man, Matt. Do you remember the Jim Cornette's Dusty Rhodes impression about this match?
Oh, absolutely.
They gonna catch it like the girls of the football game. That did not happen.
Yeah. What's crazy is they kept doing scaffold matches after this,
and they're the worst.
And yeah. And they would all just, like, crawl around up there like babies, like tiny babies, so that they wouldn't fall and break their bodies like Jim Cornette did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because in your head, a scaffold match is like that one level of Mortal Kombat, where you could just uppercut someone into spikes. Very easy.
It's the pit.
The pit, exactly. But in reality, it's just like, let's crawl around, and then I will, as gently as possible, lower myself to the floor. You know, that dark arena, and those dudes wrestling in that scaffold match, that's burned into my memory. In a way that when I watch it, I'm like, that's not how it happened, because it doesn't look like it did.
Yeah.
Filtered through VHS and my 6-year-old eyes.
Yeah, for me, it was like the mega powers exploding. It was like the that whole build up to that, and I remember being on Macho Man's side. Like, I didn't understand as a kid that you were supposed to cheer for Hulk Hogan because he seemed like such a jerk. I think Macho Man was better in his promo than Hogan was, so I was more convinced of Macho Man's position in that.
Hogan had lust in his eyes, man.
Lust in your eyes.
You jealous eyes, man. You jealous eyes. I drew that Civil War sketch cover for that guy at Heroes Con, where Macho Man is punching at Hulk Hogan.
You showed me that, and I flipped out.
It's so good. It's so good. And you've got that up on your Instagram. People should definitely check out Randy Trang's Instagram. I'm just going to throw that out there. Because not only do you have like the art like that, you've also got the videos from your master's test from Taekwondo, which are like mega impressive.
Thank you.
Just breaking stuff. Just breaking cement and boards and kicking boards and then proposing to your fiance.
Yeah, that was an interesting day. That was all planned out where I had everything happen to me at once. Because after that, I also moved from my school in Providence, Rhode Island. I moved completely to New York. I'm sitting in my New York apartment right now. Proposed to my girlfriend Nora, who you guys met over the weekend, and yeah, changed jobs and changed my city, changed everything. And yeah, now I'm working comics full time and just looking for new work. And yeah, that's my life right now.
That's so stressful. I'm getting ready to move, as listeners of the show know, and as you guys know, being friends of mine, I can't imagine putting it's bad enough that I've got deadlines, you know, it's bad enough that I've got to get scripts written and get columns written. I can't imagine also, you know, the culmination of like 20 years of study of martial arts and then on the same day proposing.
Yeah, I think that was like an insane idea, but it wound up working in for the best. I think it just wound up, everything went off without a hitch, and like the ceiling for that day was very high in terms of how great it could be, and I think it hit that ceiling. Like it broke through that ceiling. Like I think that it could have gone horribly. It all could have gone horribly wrong with everything happening at once, but it also could have been really, really great, and it was really, really great.
Getting back a little bit, so we know how you encountered pro wrestling. We know how you got into martial arts. What was it that led you to comics from there?
Well, I've been drawing my whole life, but I didn't really get into comics until I was in my early to mid-teens. I was just brought to a comic book store, and I fell in love with them. And I was always a huge Superman fan. A lot of people get into comics from the Batman animated series. And while I did love that show, I'm a Superman guy. And when the Superman cartoon came out, I watched every single episode as much as I could. And when it came time for me to kind of figure out what I wanted to do with my life, I was like, I want to be nothing but a cartoonist. This is all I want to do. I read comics like from the time I was 12 until now, nonstop, like it was my job. And I spent as much time as I could drawing. I really liked Garfield, weirdly. That doesn't match anything else, but I fucking love that cat who hates Mondays. I don't know.
I stopped myself from continuing to ask about your grandpa, but now we've got to talk about Garfield.
Yeah, man. It was a weird obsession for like 5 years of my life where I was like very much obsessed with Garfield.
I don't think it was that long for me. But I remember, and I think we've talked about this on the show before, because we've had Chip on twice. But I remember being, again, 5, 6, like the same time I was getting into wrestling, and honestly, the same time I was like really getting into, at least watching, you know, Batman on TV with the 60s series in syndication. I remember just reading and loving Garfield. And being obsessed with Garfield and like wanting Garfield stuff. And I don't know if that's a product of, you know, when we would go to the library, they always had Garfield collections in the comic section. Like I would find the comic section and Garfield was there. But I don't know if it's like just because it was available or if it's because I was reading it in the newspaper and loved it. Because again, you know, when you're 6, you get your comics where you can.
Yeah.
And that means when you go out for breakfast, when you go out to Shoney's on Sunday morning, you get the comic section in the newspaper.
I think that might be it. There's something about Garfield, and maybe it's also the way that he's drawn and the kind of clean style that he has and the kind of simple three panel gags and the fact that he's so like accessible at libraries and stuff, because that's how I also came across Garfield, was that he had a morning cartoon show that showed every morning, and he also, you know, his comics were in the library, and they were like the only comics in the library, so like those are the only comics that I could get to. So maybe, yeah, I think you're onto something there. I never really traced my weird obsession with Garfield, but that might be it. It lasted a very short time, like comparatively speaking.
You said Randy, 5 years.
that might be an exaggeration. I'd say through middle school, so like 3 years.
Well, Randy, I would like to quantify your Garfield fandom. You talked about the library having the books. Did you own collections of Garfield strips and like have them on a bookshelf?
Oh yeah, they had those Scholastic book order catalogs. I don't know if you guys ever got those, but
yes,
they had like the newest Garfield in each one. And of course, I went to like, you know, Barnes and Nobles and like bought the old collections. And I have every treasury, like those collections of comic strips from like the very first one all the way to I think like the 40th book or something like that.
Can I just say that those Garfield books have the most slapped together colors, where it's just like that Garfield font, like whatever dome pun they came up with for the cover,
yeah.
And that Garfield font, existing art from a strip, and a solid color background.
Yeah.
That's every Garfield book.
They sell, apparently. I guess it works.
It's marketing at work.
The font is called Cooper, Matt. That is Cooper.
All right. Thank you for font chat.
The podcast.
The titles never make any sense, too. It's like Garfield makes it big. And then like,
yeah.
No, Randy, they're all jokes about how he's fat. Did you not get that? Did you not get like Garfield at large? That doesn't mean he's just out there. It means he's fat.
Maybe it's because I was a fat kid too. I think that was part of it. Like I really liked this story about this fat cat that was like okay with being fat. Maybe that was it too.
Yeah, they're not subtle. Here are some. Garfield tips the scales. Garfield thinks big. Garfield hangs out. Garfield loves his feet. I don't know what that one is.
Garfield hangs out could be something very different.
Yeah. Can I? Do you have a list of them handy?
I'm looking at a photo.
Matt's looking at his bookshelf.
And that's right.
Reading them off.
I'm looking at a photo from Google Image Search that is just like a bunch of Garfield books laid out on a carpet, possibly for an eBay sale.
Because like I feel like we could very easily turn this into a game where we just say fat puns. And see which of us hits one that hasn't been used for a Garfield collection yet.
Some of them aren't even puns. They're just like, they might as well just call one of these books Garfield is Fat. Like that's the level of thought.
Can we make sure that's not one of them already?
It could be one.
Oh, I'm doing it. I'm wikiing list of Garfield collections.
Here are a few more. Garfield. Garfield pigs out. Garfield older and wider. Garfield blots out the sun.
Whoa. That was not even a pun.
Okay, this one is pretty not clever. Garfield gains weight. Garfield takes the cake.
That's essentially Garfield is fat.
Yeah, some of these are just food related. Like Garfield food for thought. Garfield swallows his pride. Those are some Garfield book titles for you.
I've got a list. I've got a couple to talk about. let's see here. Garfield by the Pound is his 22nd book.
Okay.
Garfield throws his weight around. That's number 33. Garfield feeds the kitty is number 35, which that's unsavory. I'm going to go ahead and say The 40th book was Garfield, Survival of the Fattest.
I mean, that one is getting pretty close to just Garfield is fat. you're in the ballpark there.
Hey, Matt, do you know what the 44th book was called?
It was it Garfield is Fat?
No. By the way, we're coming up on 63 Garfield books, by the way, so they're not running out anytime soon. The 44th book, Matt, was called Garfield Goes Bananas. Well, speaking of going bananas, I've got somebody here who wants to talk to you.
Oh, fuck off.
You can really tell this is the post-con episode.
Oh, my God.
All right, so you had the books, Randy.
Yeah.
Now we're getting into the next level of fandom. Did you have Garfield t-shirts?
No, actually, I have, like, I got this much later in life. I have a Garfield hoodie. That's like,
I swear to God, I thought you were about to say I have a Garfield tattoo, and I was about to lose my fucking mind.
Yeah, I have a Garfield tattoo right on my belly, across the stomach, in lieu of thug life. It's just a big head of Garfield. But no, I have a hoodie from the Hundreds, which is like a street clothing company that I got much later in life. That's like of Garfield skateboarding. But that, yeah, I didn't get that during my like my obsessed phase. I didn't have anything crazy like that. I just had the books, and I really liked those books.
And now you're just mesmerized by the design, right, of the Garfield hoodie. You couldn't pass it up.
I think my brother got it for me as like a joke. He's like, "Hey, remember that time you were just weirdly obsessed with that fat cat? Here's a sweater."
Does your brother refuse to say his name?
It's like, he's too cool to recognize who that is.
Hey, I found something with this fat cat. I don't know what his name is.
It's like Heathcliff, but it's close enough, you know.
Yeah, the poor man's Heathcliff. you know who I'm talking about?
Shots fired.
Jim Davis would like some words with you.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm not taking care of the cat. I want to segue this, all this buildup of your interests into your comics. Because a lot of your interests do really kind of filter through your comics. Roller Girl and the Flying Sidekick. Mm-hmm. There are three chapters of the six out now. Am I right about that?
Yep, there's three. I'm working on the fourth.
Okay. Martial arts are a big part of the book. Han is a martial arts master. There's some kind of Power Rangers-y stuff in here because you've got these like alien invader guys who look sort of like Pac-Man characters showing up and causing havoc, wreaking havoc. Yep. But I am curious about the Roller Girl part of it, the part that Deb plays. Do you have like some kind of particular interest in or history with roller derby, or did you just think it was cool, or you know why did you want to make one of your protagonists a roller derby star?
Yeah, my best friend, a friend of mine that I went to school with, got really into roller derby. She plays for the Philadelphia roller derby team, but she got really into it, and I got really into it because she was playing and I wanted to go see her play. And I thought it was really interesting because, and this is like weirdly going back to pro wrestling, there's a lot of that kind of showmanship that you see in pro wrestling. You know, they have entrance themes and they have fake names, and all of it is kind of like in the name of entertainment. But then once they get onto the track, then it becomes more of like a kind of athletic endeavor. And I really dug that aspect of roller derby. And also I was really adamant about having a female protagonist. I didn't want to just write another kind of like a superhero book that kind of I wanted to write a superhero book that I could show to my students at my martial arts school, but also one that I would want to read if I were a kid. And I just remember growing up and reading all these books, and they're all just kind of, you know, square jawed, straight white guys. And that's all superheroes ever look like. And I was really adamant about having a lead character, a superhero that was unlike that, and that kind of reflected the world that I live in. And to me, the people that are closest to superheroes are like sports figures or like pro wrestlers, and when it comes to women's sports, then it's like, you know, roller derby players. So that's where that came from.
You say that, you know, once they get out onto the oval,
the track, yeah.
It becomes the track. It becomes, you know, more of an athletic endeavor. But at the same time, like, I have definitely seen someone do a famouser in a roller derby match.
I need to see what kind of matches you're watching. That sounds amazing.
Matt, you call it the oval. I prefer to think of it as the ringed square.
The ringed square, yes, yes, yes.
The ringed square. I think there are some more kind of like theatrical aspects of roller derby. I think that there are some roller derby leagues out there that play up more of that entertainment factor. But yeah, I think the more interesting stuff to me is the ones that are actually like they're actual sports, the actual competition. You know, and it's like, I think that's what draws me to Japanese wrestling too, is that they take their wrestling a little more seriously. Like it is an actual fight, and there's a fight feel to it. What drew me to the Southern wrestling too, is that they kind of played that up a little bit more. They talked a little bit more about the action in the ring than like the WWF did.
Well, Randy, I think your stuff is amazing. People should definitely check you out, but I feel like now is the time for us to turn over our interview to our listeners who are sending us a few questions for you on Twitter. Matt, and if the people listening to this right now, listening right now to you, to me, to Randy, if they want to get in on these little conversations we have each and every week here on More Rocket Ajax, how exactly can they go about that?
Well, the first thing that they need to do is they need to get out their personal stationery and write a letter to Pause Incorporated. Okay? Because, look, they're going to run out of titles for these Garfield books someday. It's just going to happen. Already, they're grasping at straws. They need your help, ladies and gentlemen. They need you to come up with extremely thinly veiled half jokes about how Garfield is an overweight cat. Send them in, get them to them, so that they can title their books for years and decades to come. Because Paws Inc., it's an institution. It's like Coca-Cola. So keep them going. Then, once that you have bailed out and saved Paws Inc., then go sign up for an account on Twitter.com. Follow the Matt D. Wilson, that's me, and the ISB, that's Chris. Wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 6:30 Pacific. That is when one of us will put out the call for questions for our guest, and it is when you can ask a question like the ones you are about to hear for Mr. Randall Trang. The first question we have comes from @reallastname on Twitter, Jonathan Dick. Jonathan asks, do you ever say you're doing it wrong at depictions of martial arts in comics?
Yeah, I do. there are some Spider-Man poses. Let me tell you about Spider-Man. There are some Spider-Man poses where he's hitting people with like these gymnasts. Like you can tell that the artists are using like gymnasts for reference. But let me tell you, gymnasts do not hit people. And there are some weird flips going on, very unnecessary flips going on that Spider-Man is using. And I don't know. I feel like I should teach Spider-Man how to fight.
Yeah, but isn't like with Spider-Man, I feel like kind of part of the charm is that he is like he doesn't know how to fight. He's just really, really fast and can lift a car. So his form should be terrible.
You know, he would be such a better superhero if he just learned how to fight.
I feel like they've teased that a couple times. Like I know a while back, like there was a story that involved Peter Parker like taking lessons from Shang-Chi, you know, because it's like, yeah, you're super fast. You know when someone is about to hit you and you can lift a car. No one should ever beat you in a fight. But I feel like that's kind of his charm. Like Spider-Man's ineptitude is I think a core aspect of his character.
I feel like that's the case for a lot of characters like Superman, especially when they have him in a Justice League setting where he's kind of like the big brute and they just have him punching things. I'm just like, can you get more creative with your attacks or something? Like, The reason why people value Wonder Woman in those types of settings more than Superman is because Wonder Woman actually knows how to fight. Like, she also has that super strength and flight and invulnerability, but she knows how to fight. I feel like that's where her use is. And if you're Superman, it's like, just learn how to fight, man. Just like learn some like angles or something like that, and you'd be a lot better at beating up Darkseid for the 20th time.
Now, when I write fight scenes in comics, because you're an artist, Matt and I, we're writers. When I write fight scenes, I try to think of them as wrestling matches, right? Because you have the back and forth, you have the move and counter move, and you have stuff that's like maybe not realistic, but it matters a little more. So I try to add like a flow to the fights. Like if you've read Downset Fight, I begged Chad to let me just write the fight scene in the kitchen between Chuck and Barkley.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice like for writers? Because if you're an artist, I assume, you know, it's study martial arts, like watch fights.
Yeah. I think that there's definitely something to be said about that, especially if you're like a wrestling fan. Because wrestling is basically just telling a story through fights. Like it's a complete story through the actions of what happens in the ring. And there's, like you said, there's like an ebb and flow. There's a beginning, you know, and there's a clear middle. There's a comeback, you know, there's a fire up, and then there's getting cut off by the bad guy. And then when you don't think that the good guy is going to win, then that's when he pulls it off. And that's when you kind of earn that spectacular finish. Learning how to tell a story through action is something that I think a lot of not just comics writers, but just American storytellers in general, I think that it's there's something to be learned there, because I learned a lot of that kind of action storytelling through pro wrestling and Jackie Chan movies, like a lot of really well-made kung fu movies, because they do basically the same thing. You have the protagonist who's like the baby face, and he fights from underneath. He's the underdog, and he gets, you know, he does a few cool things at the beginning to let you know how cool he is and how awesome he is. But then he gets beat down, and then he tries to make that comeback, and then he gets cut off. And maybe he tries to make another comeback, he gets cut off again. And then he makes that final comeback, and then when he finally wins, and he finally pulls off that spectacular finish, or like in Jackie Chan's case, that spectacular stunt at the end of the movie, then you're just like, wow, that was cool. Instead of him just doing a bunch of like high spots and cool stunts in the middle of the movie that don't really mean anything. And it's the same with comics. Like, you can't have a bunch of splash pages and, like, you know, big explosions and things like that, because then they start to matter less. You have to be able to know when to place them and be able to tell a complete story using just the action instead of just putting the story on hold and having the action scene. So the serious answer to your question, Matt, was that, like, do I really care what the martial arts looks like? No, I don't really care, because I'm an artist too, and I know you have to make it look good, and you have to make the composition flow well, and that like the story kind of takes precedent over everything, you know. And action is also part of storyline. Action can't just kind of stay on its own, because then at that point it's just action for action's sake, and that's like, you know, that's like pornography. That's just, oh, look at this cool action scene, or look at this cool splash scene, and that's not as interesting to read.
Sub question. Because you talked about pro wrestling being kind of a template for you. Are you watching, or do you watch wrestling with a more critical eye ever since you started studying fighting? You know, do you watch it differently now than you did when you were a kid? I mean, obviously you do, because you're an adult. Yeah. But like, are there certain wrestlers who you're like, you know, their fighting looks worse or more staged than, you know, somebody else's?
Oh yeah. I think there are certain guys that like that know how to incorporate, because a lot of pro wrestlers nowadays are trained in the martial arts, and you can usually tell when they're able to mix their martial arts into their wrestling and make it blend very well. I think Daniel Bryan is a prime example of that, like being able to make stuff look good and make it look like it hurts, but still, you know, you can tell that he's taking care of his opponent. And Japanese wrestlers like Shinsuke Nakamura, who's like my favorite guy right now, but the way that he hits you and the way that he hits his opponents looks impactful, but it still looks like it hurts. It probably does. It definitely does still hurt, but you can tell he's using it in the right way, and he's telling the story in the right way. I just finished watching that episode of NXT where who is he wrestling? It was Blake or Murphy or one of those guys. He's using those kicks as kind of like his finishing sequence where he makes his comeback and he just nails these kicks. But you can tell he's aiming for parts that won't seriously injure his opponent. Like he's hitting him in the chest and in the arm and the meat of the leg. So he's not, you know, hitting him in like the kneecap or the head or the fingers or anything like that. I don't think anybody should kick anyone in the fingers. I think that'd be a real dick.
Yeah, I don't think that either, Randy.
Yeah, that's a real dick move.
Well, while we're on that topic, this question comes from One Word Long on Twitter. Randy, they want you to please give Chris your best advice for mixed martial arts combat.
My best advice for mixed martial arts combat? Yeah. Make sure that you train with someone that doesn't hurt you.
Backstory on this. Real quick. I did just a little bit of training, mainly just a workout with our friend Jordan Witt and with Randy at Heroes Con. And Randy actually put up a video on Instagram if you want to see what I look like when I'm doing my martial arts. There's a headband. There's a sleeveless t-shirt. See, Muay Thai and Taekwondo have different angles. So Randy kicked me in the hand and it hurt real bad. It's fine now, though. It's fine.
I'm very sorry about that.
I really rubbed it in, and then I felt bad because you really did feel bad about it.
Well, it's like I've been doing this for a long time, and I keep people safe for the, like, for, I mean, like 99% of the time that I'm training with someone, I keep them very safe. Like I was saying about, like, you know, guys like Shinsuke, guys like Daniel Bryan, like, you know, they hit hard, but they keep their opponents safe. The people that they work with, they keep them safe. And that's kind of what I pride myself with too. I don't hurt people that much, even though I can hit very hard and like I can move fairly well because I've been training for so long. Like I don't hurt people all that often. And this wasn't a bad injury. It's not like I hit you in the head or anything like that, or else I'd feel very, very, very bad. I feel like I failed, like if I'm training and I hurt my partner.
Any other advice other than don't train with Randy again?
No, that's a serious advice though. Like when you're training, make sure you train with someone that can take care of you. I mean, like that finger injury aside, like I was very careful not to actually hurt you with like my hits and things like that. And it's really important, especially if you're doing something like MMA where you have to do a lot of sparring and a lot of rolling with another opponent. You have to make sure that both of you understand that training is training and it's not a competition when you're training. And that's kind of where I'm going through now that I've switched schools and I'm training at a new Muay Thai gym. I don't know anybody there and they don't know me. So I have to very quickly find the partners that can keep me safe while I am kind of working on my techniques and working on my different skills and my different angles and stuff like that. And yeah, that's the main thing, is be safe. And then the second rule would be to think very carefully about your techniques and think very carefully about if you were to repeat these techniques thousands and thousands and thousands of times, that they wouldn't cause any kind of serious injury to you. So if you're really ripping your punches or ripping your kicks across and you feel a little bit of a twinge, you know, on your pivot leg or something like that, that probably means you'd have to focus a little bit more on your pivot and make sure that you stay safe and you keep yourself safe, in addition to making sure your partner keeps you safe. So that's my advice.
I think I'm just going to stay out of situations where Randy has to punch at me at all.
That's real good advice, Matt, in all honesty. I will say, Randy's kicks are beautiful. Like, I think I might have been distracted by that. The knee comes up, and then it just the shin comes out. It's beautiful. Beautiful.
Our next question comes from Matt Moment on Twitter. That's Matt Fisher, co-host of the Life Leave Me Alone podcast, friend of the show. He asks, if you could do a Sergeant Slaughter, that is a cartoon/wrestling crossover, with a comic character, who would it be?
What? I don't think I understand the question.
All right, you know how Sergeant Slaughter was a wrestler, but then he was in a cartoon as Sergeant Slaughter?
Yeah.
That, but in reverse.
So if someone was a cartoon and then was put into wrestling?
Yes.
Garfield,
I think, is the obvious answer.
What was his finishing move would be? Would it be like he'd kick you off the table?
Oh, like he mails you to Abu Dhabi, man. It's like a casket match, but it's a crate to be sent to Abu Dhabi.
It could be like a casket match, but it's a big trough of lasagna that he.
Oh man! Oh, he's got to have a gimmick where you know every Halloween they go through that whole storyline where he's teleports to this reality where he is alone. John and Odie don't actually exist. And
oh, yeah.
I know we've talked about this before in this really fucked up story with Garfield on the Halloween special.
Oh yeah, it's on our Every Story Ever list. The Garfield Alone. Classic.
That sounds like it would be weird for wrestling, but that's really no stranger than anything that happens with Kane.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly where my mind went. I was like, Kane is the half kind of brother of a zombie mortician. And
zombie cowboy mortician.
Except he wasn't burned. He has a girlfriend that dies, and then his opponent fucks the corpse of that dead girlfriend. And yeah, there's nothing more ridiculous than that in Garfield. Like, Garfield being a wrestler would be totally normal.
Sometimes I feel like we almost convince people to watch wrestling, and then you go and bring that up.
Yeah,
look,
we have to be realistic about what wrestling is and what garbage that we put up with when we watch wrestling.
I mean, look, that is true.
Listen, we live in a world where Hulk Hogan, pre-Hollywood Hulk Hogan in WCW, went to the Dungeon of Doom realm and was very upset by the notion of the water not being cold. So
there's no Hulkamaniacs here.
It's not
it's
hot.
Not cold.
No, he touches the water. He goes, ah, it's not hot.
Oh, that's right. It's not hot. It's not cold. It's not hot. Which is an even weirder thing to think about that water.
Oh my god.
That it's not hot. Okay. This is the last question. This is from Crooked Knight on Twitter. David wants to know, Randy, what's your second favorite kind of kick?
Do people know my first favorite kind of kick? Is that a well known thing?
Could be. I am merely relaying the question.
I've got a least favorite kick of Randy's. I'll tell you that for free.
I think we have the same answer, and that's the type of kick that goes straight into Chris Sims's fingers.
Well, our guest has been Randall Trang. Randy, all joking aside, thank you for feeling so bad about it. And you were, we will be more careful. Here's what I learned. Don't use focus mitts with the kicks. Use the tie pads. You got to get the tie pads. Focus mitts are just for boxing.
Yeah, that's the exact reason we don't use those for kicks most of the time.
Yeah, I'm getting it now. You're a great guy, wonderful artist, fantastic dude to talk to. Before we let you go, can you please let everyone know where they can find you on Twitter?
Or online, in
other places.
Yeah, you can find me at Randall Trang, that's two L's, RANDALLTRANG. I'm on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram under that name. You can also find me on Facebook if I know you personally. And yeah, I think that's it. Oh, also randalltrang.com is my website, and that actually just redirects you to my Tumblr page.
And is that where everybody can find all of your comics as well?
Yes. Yeah. There will be a link there to my Big Cartel page where I sell Roller Girl and the Flying Sidekick, which is my Ologies comic about a roller derby player and her martial arts instructor fighting an alien war. And also my journal comics, which is my autobiographical comics that I post not regularly, but every once in a while when I feel like it. And those are collected in print editions that are also on sale on my website.
Randy, thank you so much for being on the show. You're a great guy, and everybody should check out your comics.
Thank you for having me. This was a blast.
Thanks once again to Randy Trang for joining us. Definitely, definitely check out his stuff. Such a great guy. But now, Matt, let's do a quick one. Let's do a quick round of panel president.
This is
Panel President, this is the segment where listeners send us lists of characters from comic books. And then we put those characters on a master list from best to worst of the most electable and least electable characters of all time. This list comes from Eamon Glenn. No real theme, he says, just five characters that popped into his head. One of those characters I'm immediately disqualifying.
Okay.
Because I created him. Copernicus Jones, gone. We're not ranking anybody we created. First up on Eamon's list, we have Naruto Uzumaki.
Never read a panel.
Yeah, I've never read any of Naruto either.
We've had a lot of requests for more manga characters on the list, but like, Goku can't get on this one, folks. Not yet.
I mean, I could only do cartoon Goku. I couldn't do comics Goku.
But yeah, Naruto, no idea. He could be great. I have no idea. I'm not even bagging on the guy. I just haven't read all 98 volumes of Naruto.
I've barely seen any of the anime Naruto, so sorry. Sorry about that one. The next three I know we can rank, though. First up is Crusher Hogan.
Crusher Hogan, in case you don't know, that is the wrestler that is defeated by young Peter Parker in record time in Amazing Fantasy 15 during his first outing, but before he's even Spider-Man, right?
Right, before he is Spider-Man. He's just got like a webbed up mask that he has on and like a fucking turtleneck and jeans.
Yeah, it's pretty
wrestling,
great.
That he's wrestling Crusher Hogan in. Because Crusher Hogan has a contest to give $100 to whoever can stay in the ring with him for 3 minutes.
Yes. Now, the weirdest thing about Crusher Hogan is that with a name like that, you would be like, oh, right. He's like because of Hulk Hogan, right? Like, because he's a wrestler. Crusher Hogan predates Hulk Hogan by like 2 decades.
He looks kind of like anytime like Ryback is described as one of the wrestlers from that Ren and Stimpy episode,
mm-hmm.
where they go wrestling. That is accurate, but Ryback is also exactly Crusher Hogan. Crusher Hogan is like whatever template you have in your mind for a professional wrestler who's like a big, muscly, bald guy.
Crusher Hogan, very minor character in Amazing Fantasy 15, comes back in what I would say is one of the better Spider-Man stories of the 80s. Which is saying something, which is whatever happened to Crusher Hogan.
Yep.
Although, as good as that story is, it's also a bullshit story because Crusher Hogan is working at a boxing gym and not a wrestling gym, which it's the 80s, so yeah, whatever, but bullshit. Bullshit. The other thing is, are we creating a distinction between Crusher Hogan and Bonesaw McGraw?
Oh, we have to.
Okay,
we
so must. You would say Bonesaw McGraw, different character.
Bonesaw McGraw is not, to my knowledge, in any comic. So we wouldn't be ranking him on this list anyway.
Okay. Crusher Hogan is the definition of a really great minor character who had one great, you know, whatever happened to story that we never need to see him again. Like, I would be nervous if Crusher Hogan was announced as a special guest star in an upcoming issue of Spider-Man.
Sure. I believe there was another Crusher Hogan issue, like a Tangled Web story.
Oh, yeah, the one that Raven co-wrote with Brian Azzarello.
That's right.
That's a really, really great story. And it's like kind of works in the continuity of whatever happened to Crusher Hogan, because in whatever happened to, he's like a has-been. It's like, you know,
yeah,
10 years later or whatever, and his life's in shit.
You ever seen the movie The Wrestler? That happened to Crusher Hogan first. For real.
What if the next story about Crusher Hogan is Crusher Hogan going, hey, Spider-Man, you want to play Nintendo?
Let's rank him. I do like Crusher Hogan. There's not a lot of there.
Yeah, we're really only talking about three single-issue comics, one of which he's in for like four panels. Again, he's a character that has been used sparingly to generally good effect. Like, 100% of Crusher Hogan appearances are good comics.
Does he rank above, like, a Stilt Man?
I don't think he ranks above Stilt Man. Like, purely for vision. Like, I'm looking below, like even Adam X. Like, I would say where we have to look is like around Anna Maria Marconi, around Carly Cooper, around those, you know, certainly more prominent but still kind of minor characters.
Minor Spider-Man characters. Minor Spider-Man characters, in fact.
Yeah. Which is, you know, like, it's unsurprising that we have more Spider-Man supporting cast members on here than, like we don't have Lois and Jimmy Olsen on here, I don't think, but we've got, like, four Spider-Man love interests on this list.
Okay, here's what I'll say. I would rather read a Crusher Hogan story than a story about the original Human Torch or Donna Troy.
I wholeheartedly agree. Sorry, Jim Hammond. Sorry, Donna Troy.
But I think I'd put him below Carly Cooper.
Okay, then I think that's where he goes. Hey, I think he enters the list at number 66, because I think we're both in agreement on that.
The next one on Eamon's list is Stephanie Brown. Spoiler.
Who? If you don't know, that was my gimmick on Comics Alliance for a long time, was to pretend to just not know who Stephanie Brown was. But then I realized that was me being a dick, so...
Spoiler has improved a lot as a character.
Spoiler, like, really has improved a lot. Like,
if one character has really, like, raised their profile in a very good way since the New 52, I think it's been Spoiler.
Yeah, I don't know if any other character has had the kind of, like, boost back into prominence that she's had. Because, you know, obviously she was Batgirl pre-New 52. I regret not reading that series, but I really hated that costume. Like, I really hated it.
Well, I think she was just another, you know, she was another Batgirl. She was another Batgirl that wasn't Barbara Gordon.
In the first issue of that series, like, Cassandra Cain just kind of, like, walks off panel and goes, "You're Batgirl now." And it's, like, it's a weird setup, even though what I've read of that series, and I really want to go back and read it start to finish because there's only like 18 issues of it, but what I read of that series is very good and very clever, and she's a really fun character in it, and I do genuinely regret not reading that book when I had the chance.
I appreciate that she's created there's an identity for her now that is Spoiler. That isn't Batgirl or you know, that little hunk of time when she was Robin. She was a Robin, right?
Yeah, she was Robin for like a hot minute. You know, she had a cup of coffee as Robin. Great costume when she was Robin.
Yeah.
By the way, the suit looked awesome.
Well, like, instead of having to be a legacy character, which I think there's a certain level of diminishing returns with that, as Spoiler, she's been able to have her own identity, and I think that has worked really well for her.
It's a role that suits her and that allows for so much more. Like, we've seen characters, you know, obviously there's Talia, but there's also, you know, Joker's daughter, who's actually Two-Face's daughter. Like, we've seen the character who's, like, you know, the daughter of the villain or the child of the villain before. And it's, like, making her the daughter of the Clue Master, who's super minor, frees her in a way that tying her to a Ra's al Ghul, a Two-Face, like, would tie her down. You still get to have that idea of familial redemption, but it can play out in a different way, and she becomes a different character because of it. And I think that's, like, really cool. I like that we're back to the point where there are enough members of the Batman family and enough, like, really good members of the Batman family that she can be part of that ensemble cast where her relationships with all of them matter and support her, but don't define her role in the story. Like, I would not say now that Stephanie Brown is primarily defined by being Tim Drake's girlfriend, like she was in the 90s, you know?
All right, let's rank Stephanie Brown. Let's rank Spoiler.
I think she goes above Starfire. She should probably go above Bad Rock. But, like, I don't know if I really want to put her above, like, a lot of the Generation X kids. I mean, because, you know, I have a very newfound affection for them. But I don't know, Matt, where are you looking at? Where are you looking at on the list?
There's a lot of, like, characters that I think it's easy to be conflicted about in here, like Harley Quinn or Superboy.
Yeah. I think Superboy's a good thing to look at because he's another one of those 90s characters that has had, like, some real, like, at least for you and me, like, some real kind of unappealing characterizations over the years and some stuff that, like, was very unappreciated in its time. that we love now, you know?
Yeah.
So I think the question is, like, as it stands right now, like, in the Rebirth era of the DC Universe, I think Spoiler is clearly a better character than Kal-El. But I don't know if that's the case looking at the whole of their careers.
So you wouldn't necessarily feel right putting her above, like, Boom Boom or M?
I've never written a story with Stephanie Brown in it. I have written plenty of comics about Monet St. Croix, and she is super, super great. So,
all right. Do you want to put her between Boom Boom and Casanova?
I think that's fair.
I think her star is rising, though. I think Stephanie Brown could rise even higher.
Yeah, I think Stephanie Brown, if anybody gets revisited at the end of the year, I think it should be Stephanie Brown.
She's really good in Detective right now, I'll say that. The last one here on Eamon's list is Cassandra Cain.
Okay, Cassandra Cain, currently known as Orphan, formerly known as Black Bat, a terrible name, but a great costume.
Former Batgirl.
Batgirl 3, or Batgirl 2, if you are a pedant like me and you count Betty Cain as Bat-Girl. Yeah, I fucking love Cassandra Cain. I think Cassandra Cain's awesome.
Yeah, I do too. I think Cassandra Cain is great. I loved her run as Batgirl.
Yeah, like, she's a great concept in terms of her relationship to the Batman family. She's a great concept in terms of how her powers work and how she works. The sidekicks, right? They all bring out a contrast in Batman. Like, Dick's friendly, and Tim's, like, smart, and maybe doesn't want to be a superhero for his whole life. And Spoiler's kind of, you know, perky, I guess, in a lot of ways. And then, you know, you have Cassandra, who's basically Bruce Wayne as a 15-year-old Asian girl. Like, she's that dour. She's you know, she's got a motivating tragedy. She's grumpy. She's remote and removed. And I think that makes her a really interesting character and a really fun character. I'm really curious to see how she's going to play out as Orphan. And I'm glad, like, I'm super glad she's back. There's no reason to lose her. When Stephanie Brown became Batgirl, and then when Barbara Gordon came back as Batgirl, they clearly had no idea what to do with Cassandra Cain. Because Cassandra Cain had never been anything else. She was only Batgirl.
Yeah.
So she didn't have an identity to go back to. When Dick was Batman, I wanted her to be Nightwing. Because I think that would be a really cool name for her. But obviously, you know, Dick's back to being Nightwing now. So she is Orphan. But I love her. I think she's great. Batgirl number 2 from 2000. It's basically the issue where she decides that she needs to learn how to read. Is one of the best single issues of at least the early aughts, you know? Just solid, like, just solid emotional storytelling from Kelly Puckett and Damon Scott.
And I loved the way that she eventually crossed over with the broader Batman stories of that time. I mean, she ended up being a big part of the whole Bruce Wayne murderer thing, or Bruce Wayne fugitive thing, because it was her dad who actually framed him, and then she got pulled into that, and some of that was actually really nicely done. Let's rank her. Do you think she goes above Superboy? I think she probably goes above Kal-El.
I think maybe she's not as good as the Ninja Turtles, but I think she's right under them.
So, like, between Michelangelo and Miss Misery?
Yeah, I would say that's a good place for her. Like, I'd be tempted to put her up around by like Black Cat and Emma Frost, but I know she's not as good as Michelangelo.
Yeah, I'm good with that. Cassandra Cain is absolutely great. That is going to do it for our panel president segment. Thank you for sending in that list, Eamon. We really appreciate it. If you would like to send us a panel president list, you can do so by sending it to our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send every story ever lists, listener questions. If you have comments, you can email them to us. Or if you want to sponsor the show, you can let us know there. Also, check out our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. That is another place where you can send us listener questions. And it's where we often read off the questions for our listener questions segment. Check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. And check us out on iTunes. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes. The more positive reviews you get on iTunes, the more we are featured. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. For me, you can go to about.me/MattDWilson and find links to my Twitter and my Tumblr. You can also find links to my books on Amazon. Also, check out Copernicus Jones, Robot Detective. It is available on Comixology, 7 issues. We are working on issue 8 currently. Chris, where can everybody find your stuff?
People can find links to my stuff at about.me/ChrisSims. You can, of course, find Downset Fight and X-Men 92 Volume 0, War Zones, on Comixology and Amazon.com if you would like to pick up hard copies. And you can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at the ISB. On both of those, that's T-H-E-I-S-B as in Batman. I'm going to be doing a one-day show in Charleston in July, so I hope if you're in the area that I get to see you there. Other than that, I think Heroes was the last big one for the year for me. Please give a read to X-Men 92, the ongoing series. Number 5 is out next week. It is the Cyclops and Jean issue that I think people have been wanting since we kicked him off the team at the end of the miniseries. It's the weirdest comic Chad and I have ever written. And that counts the entire X-Men 92 miniseries and even the stuff we've self-published. So if you want to read Scott and Jean getting weird, read that one. Oh, also, Matt, we didn't talk about it in the comics review section, but Civil War II Choosing Sides number 1 came out this past week. And Chad and I wrote a 10-pager in that one that's a damage control story with art by Leonardo Romero. This was a super fun one. We've done a lot of like short stories and backup stories in our careers, and this is by far my favorite one that we've done. I think it's really fun, and those characters are so fun to write. And one of the nicest things that that happened with this was that Tom Brevoort said it was very much in the spirit of Dwayne McDuffie, who longtime listeners will know was a huge, huge hero of mine and an inspiration. So that was a really, really cool thing to get to do and enjoy that. It's another one that gets a little weirder than you might be expecting, but it's a 10-page damage control story in Civil War II Choosing Sides number 1. So check that out. That's all I got. This has been War Rocket Ajax number 310. Matt, do you think we could get Stone Cold Steve Austin to be on episode 316? We got 5 weeks to find out.
We're really going to have to hit that hard if we're going to make that happen.
What if we just do the episode as two Steve Austins?
I'm sure all our fans would love that a lot.
All right, son, get serious. Have a great week, everybody.
We'll catch your ass down the road.
Yeah!